Good evening, Browns fans, and welcome to the Gang of Two. You got myself, you got Mr. Pete Smith. How you doing, Pete?
I'm here.
You're here? Is that what you said?
Big week, but yes.
Oh, yes, big week, and you're here, which makes an even bigger week. Although not quite as big as my head on the screen, there is a huge difference between the size of my head and the size of your head on this screen, Pete, that we're going to have to deal with over the course of the next. Oh, let's just pretend it's not happening. Good evening, Browns fans, and welcome to Gang of Three. My name is Barry McBride. I'm the publisher of the OBR. Lane is unavailable tonight, so it's just me and Pete to take you through the next hour. Remember, as always, to subscribe and like this broadcast so that we can fool others into our trap, sort of lure them in to the Gang of Three. It would really help us out to trap more into the Gang of Three world. A lot had happened last week. A lot is about to happen this week, Pete. Let's go back to last Monday night. We were talking about Myles Garrett, Jared Verse, and a bunch of draft picks that were exchanged for Garrett. Verse is already a pretty high-level young edge player, not just a future pick. And as Andrew Berry talked about it last week, was really central to the deal. You've had a week to think about it. Pete, would you rather have that one remaining Hall of Fame edge rusher or young Pro Bowl edge plus 3 years of team-building ammo? What side are you coming down on after a week of thinking about it?
Well, the thing is, like, it's really difficult for me to argue with half Hall of Fame, arguably best player in football. But there are elements to this which seem to be making themselves apparent in terms of both just how much Myles Garrett seemed to want out, whether or not he was expressing it publicly or not, how little his teammates seemed to be that upset about it, and the fact that whether I like it or not, I mean, my big concern is that Myles Garrett's got to play until he's 40 and make us all look stupid, which I think is absolutely in the realm of possibility. But Jared Verse is very good. He's about to be 26. And I think a lot of the people who were saying the Browns didn't get enough were frankly overreacting. I think they did fine in terms of the trade. You're always going to say you could get more, especially when you can contrast it against the Travis Hunter trade, which was preposterous and, you know,
yeah.
Just doesn't happen very often. And I think, you know, people made comparisons to the Ricky Williams trade, which is not going to happen again, at least unless Mike Ditka is going to come back and run a team. So that's the problem is I think people refuse to sort of deal in reality. And my big case is if you said you needed to get 3 ones for Myles Garrett, I think the difference between the first, the second next year, and a third the following year, I think Jared Verse makes up the difference, which would easily get you to the 3 ones if you want to make that case. But my point is, you don't have to wait for next year to make a pick. You get a football player who's good right this second. We can see him. Hopefully the weather will hold up and we're outside. But if not, I'll be inside watching him tomorrow. The other part about that is the message it sends to the team. If the Browns just sent Myles Garrett off for just a bunch of draft picks, I think that's a terrible message to the guys in the locker room, because it sort of tells you, even if they don't necessarily mean it that way, this season doesn't matter. And it's June to say that. Like, the season's going to go on into January. That is a long time to sort of endure what the team is sort of signaling is meaningless football. So you get a player and the messaging that goes along with getting Jared Verse is, yeah, we're losing a Hall of Fame player. We're losing this fantastic player. You are getting a really good football player right now. And he is motivated to be good now. He's already a good player. It fits with what we do. And then the last piece of this is I'm very impressed with Jared Verse. I think we don't really know these guys, but I was very impressed with how he carried himself and came off. I liked the fact that he was very open about his feelings on the situation. He didn't lie to anybody and say, "Oh, I couldn't wait to be traded." He was in Los on a team with Super Bowl aspirations. He was drafted with his best friend. Of course this was going to bother him. Like, let's not pretend. Let's not lie to anybody and pretend. So he goes through the process of saying, yeah, it sucks. I didn't want to be traded. I love my teammates. I love my coaches. I love where I was at. I love where we're going. And sort of puts that out there and then goes through the process of, yeah, I did all that. Then I went through it. I got over it. And then just the way he carries himself, there's a lot of there. It feels like there's a significant amount of substance behind the young man in terms of what he's saying, who he wants to be, why this is important to him. And fairly or not, there has always been this sort of erudite nature to Myles Garrett in that he knows exactly how good he is and get away with that, where Jared Verse doesn't have that sort of air about him. He's more humble. And I don't say that as a negative to Myles Garrett, but if you are, you know, you do the sort of quote unquote Cleveland fan or Midwest fan, Rust Belt fan, however you want to sort of tab them, I think Jared Verse is more relatable for that style of fan. I think the biggest thing with Myles Garrett is it's another reminder where the greatest player on the planet in the respective sport basically told you he didn't want to be there. And there, who you are, that doesn't feel very good. And it doesn't feel good right. for a few reasons.
Yeah. You know, I get a lot of email at Barry@theobr.com, you know, from folks who expressing a variety of different opinions. And, you know, again, this week was no different. I really think, Pete, that, you know, your confidence in this trade has everything to do with your confidence in the organizational competence of the Cleveland Browns. Because Jared Verse is obviously not Myles Garrett, right? You got a first, you got a second, you got a third, and you're enthusiastic about the trade if you think that Andrew Berry or whoever is calling the shots in a couple of years can turn that into, you know, help turn that into a starting quarterback, some offensive line depth, you know, some of the other things that we need. And I think that if you're confident in Andrew Berry, you tend to like the trade. If you're not confident in Andrew Berry, you tend to scoff at it. And that's a lot of the reaction I've gotten this week.
I think it's fair. Now, I have intentionally detached the quarterback element just from the trade because I think that's unrealistic. Because for the sake of argument, if the Browns go out and play this year and they look pretty good or whatever, and there's a free agent quarterback on the market and they sign that guy and, you know, they essentially try to go the Sam Darnold route, then you're probably not going to, I mean, you still could, but you're probably not going to trade a million picks to go get one particular guy. You're probably going to use it for a whole bunch of different things. Likewise, if there's a weird turn of events and either the Browns are bad enough or the quarterback class is good enough, they may not have to trade a million picks to get the guy they want at quarterback, and then you can use the other picks to do other things. So you could end up in a situation where this ends up being four players for the price of one, and one of those guys is Jared Verse, who's very good. At worst, you're going to get the 32nd pick in the draft, and I know a lot of people are sort of making that a foregone conclusion. I do not. I think the pick is going to still end up very high, but it's still a pick, and we just went through the draft this past year barely a month ago, where we're sitting here and we're right, you know, we're singing Barry's praises because he got Denzel Boston at 39 and then managed to trade up and get Emmanuel McNeil Warren at 58. So 32nd pick, if that's what it is, has some real value that can get you a real good football player. Obviously, if they use it correctly, it's a similar deal with the second, third round. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, with all of these things, if you go back to the Julio Jones trade, if you go back to some of the other trades, what happens with those picks is certainly important. The difference is that whether it's the Julio Jones trade or Travis Hunter, you got a proven football player. So, you know, and obviously, I guess there's a world where this can go just like Deshaun Watson, where Jared Verse arrives in Ohio and then just can't play football anymore. But I think that sort of limits how bad this trade could really be. Obviously, if they blow the picks, it's going to hurt significantly. But like, if Jared Verse continues on the trajectory he's on, you're going to at least have that, and it becomes a situation where you essentially you know, the real life manifestation of trading down. You traded down for Myles Garrett to get Jared Verse and a whole bunch of draft assets.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the things that happened since we were here last week is that Andrew Berry spoke. He talked about the trade. He talked about the rationale for it. And like I said earlier, Jared Verse obviously came through loud and clear as an important part of that. But I sort of thought Barry's statements were a little bit revealing. You know, he said the team had wanted Garrett to be a one-helmet player, quote-unquote. Mm-hmm. But the Rams' offer forced a legitimate crossroads. He also sort of tied the move to a, quote-unquote, new era. You know, sort of a young core, you know, some cap flexibility, replenished assets. You know, but I think in doing that, he puts the team on a timeline. Right? The timeline is not 2026. Mm-hmm. You expect improvement in 2027, but you really expect this group to blossom in 2028, 2029. And that makes you think a little bit about veterans who sort of are misaligned with the timeline, right? We talked about this a bit last week as well, obviously. And one of the names that pops out is Denzel Ward, of course. Are there other names that you think of that just sort of maybe don't fit with the what looks like a 2 or 3 year plan?
Malik Collins would be the other one, but obviously he's injured still and recovering. Those are the two big ones. I mean, you could include Grant Delpit if you want to. I don't. I think they're going to extend him. I think they should extend him. But Denzel Ward, I understand why everybody sits there and like puts Denzel Ward on the clock. I don't. Somebody has to play corner. You're not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I don't know if the other guys that aren't Tyson Campbell can do it that currently are there. You know, even before this whole thing went down, one of the things I was sort of looking at was that the Browns desperately needed to sort of consider and evaluate was more corner depth with Denzel Ward and Tyson Campbell. So the idea of shipping off Denzel Ward for mysterious draft pick, again, it's the same concept. You're not getting help now. So unless you can either trade Denzel Ward to get a younger corner and something, or just a younger corner, or trade Denzel Ward for draft pick and then make some other alternative trade or signing that can fill that corner thing, I don't see it as a likelihood. Where I think that could change is I think they'll go into the season with Denzel Ward, and then if the season goes real bad real fast or whatever and they get to the trade deadline, there could easily be a scenario where a team has an injury or just sees an opportunity, and Denzel Ward for half a season in the stretch run could be pretty valuable for a team that's not necessarily married the idea of him being there for a long-term investment. The Browns flipped Amari Cooper for a preposterous amount given what he was able to do for the Buffalo Bills. I think that makes far more sense, but for the time being, at least for the moment, Denzel Ward is saying all the things you want to hear from Denzel Ward in terms of he wants to stay because last at the Super Bowl when Myles Garrett said, you know, made the demand and Denzel Ward basically said, I don't know if I want to be here, if Myles Garrett's not want to be here. And then his softball game says, I want to be here. So you heard that from him. Whether or not that's what he's saying behind closed doors, who knows? But somebody has to play corner. And from what I've seen, they don't have another starting corner in camp at this point. Maybe there's something they can do, but I think Denzel Ward sees the value in being a career Cleveland Brown. I think Denzel Ward sees the value of potentially being a trade piece later if it comes to pass. But like, I don't rule out the possibility that the Browns are just going to literally have Denzel Ward play this year, play next year, and that's it. But we'll see. Malik Collins is the other one that sort of makes sense. But again, they don't have enough defensive linemen. So you sit there and you go, well, they could potentially flip Malik Collins, but they need Malik Collins. So I don't see it. Like, this is the difference. And from what I can tell, the other element is Myles Garrett. Whatever Andrew Berry wants to say, I don't think Myles Garrett was talking to them. We had Ben Albright on this side up talking about it. I think he was all but checked out and sort of giving them the silent treatment in terms of what he was doing. And I think to a certain point, the Browns were basically sort of fed up with the whole situation. So we can't keep doing this over and over and over again. And then hoping Myles Garrett will like us and get this thing going. Even if they were, you know, short of a miraculous quarterback situation coming around, all of a sudden them winning. And I don't even know if that was going to be enough. I don't want to say it was irreconcilable differences, but it was getting to a point where it could have gotten very ugly. And I think the Browns just sort of basically said, the Rams are giving us exactly what we had to get in order to make this trade. And that's the only way we made this trade. I do believe that part. I think Jared Verse absolutely was contingent on the deal. And I expect the Rams were desperately trying to do anything in their power to make it so they could have Jared Verse and Myles Garrett and Kobe Turner and all those other guys and make that, because they don't care. They're clearly content to keep picks or keep throwing picks at things and go for the short-term window if that's what it means. I think that's where we end up. Yes, there are veterans you could theoretically move. I just don't think it makes sense at this venue, maybe during the season, but even then, I don't love the odds. You're muted. It works better when you're muted.
Oh, geez. I don't know how that happened. But at any rate, there's a couple things you said that I want to pick up on. One of them is Ben Albright's interview in The Site Up. And if you haven't seen it, go see it. It's, I think, about 10 minutes into the broadcast. This Site Up, you got to try anyway because it's radically different from anything else that's out there in the Browns pod space. Fast moving, quick, in just a variety of things. You got to try it out. But Albright's interview, he dropped a couple of bombs. And so you're going to want to see that. On the subject of Denzel Ward, the chat room is probably going to hate me for this. If the chat room doesn't hate me already, which is probable. But the Denzel Ward scares the hell out of me. I understand exactly what you're saying, that we don't have a replacement here for Denzel Ward. The team is going to suffer unless we get somebody good in return for him at the cornerback position. But his injury history has me worried, Pete. Maybe you can talk me off the ledge here. I'm just scared of another concussion, or something like that happening to him at this point. He does have that history. If you got somebody giving you good value for Denzel, I think you listen right now at the very least. And I say that because of the injury history. Or is that just
my panicking too much? I think other teams may be thinking the same thing, and they may not be inclined to give up. I do think the trade deadline is helpful. If he's healthy, you're not asking him to do the full season. You're not asking him to do all the things. Now, the one thing I would say is the last 2 years, Denzel Ward has missed a combined 3 games. Whatever you want to say about his track record, last 2 years, he's missed 3 games. So, yes, he's not made it through a full season basically ever. But in terms of his track record for injuries, he's actually gotten a little bit better recently. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, what's the breaking point? I don't know. I mean, we don't know with any of these guys, and we've obviously seen it with a guy like Joe Thomas, where he thought he'd play basically forever, and all of a sudden he hurt his tricep. He's like, yep, I can't. So is it always a concern? Yes, Denzel's size makes you worried. Obviously, his history of head injuries can make you nervous. I'm sure the Browns have had conversations with Denzel about what he thinks about, you know, what he wants to do and all these other things. But until the thing happens, you don't really know. So I get it. But that's also the reason I think the Browns may just be like, there's not a whole lot of demand out there. He has more value to us, both in terms of what he can play, do on the field, and sort of the fan adoration of Denzel Ward because he's a popular player.
Sure.
Potentially shipping him off for, because that's the other part. A second round pick would feel like a good return. I think people are expecting you could get a first round pick for Denzel Ward. I just don't think that's possible. If it's at the trade deadline, are you going to be happy with like a third and maybe something else, like some sort of conditional pick? Probably not, but I get it. Like, that's the other part. Like, is it going to feel good to trade him for what's going to feel like probably not great return?
Right, right. I think you've got a good point that it's not like the other teams aren't cognizant of Ward's injury history, and they would factor that into whatever they give us for him. I just tend to think, you know, this might be the time, since he doesn't really line up with the timeline, but someone would have to come in with a pretty good offer to make me part with Denzel Ward, but I'd be listening at this point. But anyway, we did get Jared Verse, and we had a live starting left defensive edge rusher at OTAs. It's been a while since we had a starter at OTAs. He said he's not trying to fill Garrett's shoes. Munkin said he fit like a glove. Nice cap hit. You got to see him in person, Pete. Obviously, it was his first day as a Cleveland Brown when you got to see him virtually. And he didn't know the defense. So I'm guessing he just participated in individual drills, right?
Yeah. So, you know, it was individual drills. I'll be very curious to see starting tomorrow if he's in there. I assume he wants to be in there for some, at least some amount of the team stuff, because he wants to get going and start mm-hmm. to sort of show what he can do and fit in the defense and everything here. So I'm sure he's been cramming away and trying to learn as much as possible. So, you know, we get to see potentially the start of what will be a whole lot of Jared Verse v. Spencer Fano, right. Which obviously was going to be Fano versus Myles Garrett was certainly going to be anticipated. And, this will also be a heavyweight matchup. And the fact that the Browns are going to, since it's mandatory and we'll see who's participating and all that stuff, but like, you're going to get the heavyweights out there. Obviously Tyson Campbell's been out there going against receivers and stuff, but now you're going to get Denzel Ward. How's Concepcion or Boston or Jerry Jeudy look against him? Obviously we've seen Jeudy against these guys in the past. Grant Delpit presumably is going to be out there and hopefully competing. They've been playing against the defense without Ward, without Delpit. Manuel McNeil Warren's been out the past couple of weeks. Is he going to be back? Because all of a sudden this defense becomes very competitive, and now we're going to get a better test of what this offense can do and what these guys mm-hmm. can do. You know, I think there's reason to be optimistic about the guys the Browns drafted, including Denzel Boston, who's made some plays against Tyson Campbell. But now you've got everybody together. Is the offense suddenly going to be slowed down? Are we going to get sort of an adjustment where we're sitting here going, oh, these guys are young. They need to figure this thing out. Same thing. Right. Would it shock me if Spencer Fano gets sort of sent to the ground at some point because Jared Verse is just so powerful and he's done it against some really, really good players? No, but how will he respond? Is he going to get up and get back out there and figure it out and get better? Those are the elements that we want to see and see how they go. So, yeah, Verse is obviously going to be a big deal. I mean, I know there's so many people are sitting there like, you know, treating this, well, the season's over, they traded Myles Garrett and all this, but like, there's a lot of things to be excited about and watching in terms of how this team's going to grow and develop. Now, how good are they going to be? Ultimately, I don't know, but they've got a lot of talented players who sit there and go, okay, this could be really interesting.
Yeah, and it is. But, you know, one of the things that concerns me is that, you know, Schwartz's offense was predicated on this very aggressive front four, right? You know, very aggressive rush. And Jared Verse is – you know, he's going to make a lot of Browns fans happy because of the way he plays. He seems like a brawler to me, you know, a guy who just fights through pressure. Whereas, you know, Myles Garrett was this comet, this meteor coming off the edge who could beat people any number of ways, right? It seems to me that Verse's style, which is more, I interpret more as a straight line to the quarterback, is going to affect the way that Rutenberg schemes this defense, right? That you might have more pressure from the edge, from the linebacker or the safety position or something like that. What do you think the Browns are going to have to do to adapt? You know, as good as Verse is, he's different than Garrett. How do you adapt that defense for his style?
So, obviously, my descriptor for – I mean, when Jared Verse was asked, all he said was violent. I would describe his style of play as blunt force trauma. He just nails on people and has the pelts to prove it. I also think the thing that will differentiate him and I think will earn him fans, assuming they, you know, actually really pay attention to him, effort. constantly high effort guy, motor guy, always playing. Again, if you want to play into the trope, he plays a blue collar style of football. It's not necessarily pretty. It's forceful effort, gives everything he's got all the time. Doesn't always lead to great results, but he never cheats you in terms of if you're going to a game to see Jared Verse, you can give everything he's got. So that blunt force trauma, he's got a bull rush, a club, and a rip. Those are his three big moves. And to your point, he does play sort of linear style of football for the most part. It's a lot of straight lines. And when you are that powerful, it makes it very easy to stay in straight lines because you're just sending an offensive lineman backwards. And what that's going to allow them to do, and what I think Rootberg's already sort of shown, is they're going to blitz a ton. He was with the Falcons last year. They blitzed a lot and showed a lot of exotic pressures. Before, with Robert Saleh, he was with the Jets. They sent a ton of exotic pressures. That's what he wants to do. He wants to keep teams off balance. He's got really, really good talent in terms of linebackers. You know, Carson Swetchner and Quincy Williams basically run all practice because they're just constantly around doing stuff, and they're really, really talented players. And the safeties and those guys are going to come off the edge as well. But because Verse and to a certain extent Alex Wright both play in very hard lines and power, it makes it easy to plan how you want to blitz. You know where Jared Verse and Alex Wright are going to be for the most part, and you can do things accordingly. Jared Verse is also somebody, and the Rams did this a significant amount, stunting. He's a guy who would, you know, slant, take a guy to the next gap inside, and knock them all the way out. So creating a path for a blitzing linebacker, or if he's going in a straight line hard up the field, it creates a clean angle for the safety. So as opposed to Myles Garrett, who phenomenally talented, but his natural rush is just there's so much variability because of how athletic he is, how wide he may want to go, how, you know, what angle he wants to take, which can just makes it a little bit more difficult to sort of plan around his angles. It's not the end of the world, but like Verse is very clean in that respect. So whether it's stunts, whether it's setting up different kinds of blitzes, whether it's the lines they use, I think it should enable them to have very clear paths on where these guys are going, very rehearsed looking plays in terms of how he's calling it. It's going to look very familiar, and I think they're already building this up. And last Wednesday, where the defense really had a good day, part of that is because the defense started utilizing more 5 and 6 man pressures. Up to that point, it had been a lot of 4 man fronts and just sort of everybody else back. Last week, they start sending more pressure, and they gave the offensive protection fits as a result. Numerous sacks and all this other stuff. So when they get Wright was out there that day, when they get Verse out there, they've got, incidentally, a weirdly similar dynamic in terms of humongous human beings on the edge and then very light, more lighter, more athletic guys on the interior in terms. So that part's not going to change. But stylistically, Myles Garrett was just such a different human being than everybody else in terms of athleticism, where Verse is plays more to how you'd expect a guy like Jared Verse to play.
Yeah, it's been an interesting point about the predictability of where Verse is going to be. You know, you understand, you know, that his level of improvisation is probably less than Miles, but that might make it easier to scheme some things around him. You know, looking at the defensive end group in particular, in fact, the whole defensive line, other than Malik Collins, who I don't know anything about, you know, in terms of his leadership ability, it's a pretty young group, you know. And we've got Okwara, you know, as a backup on one side. We've got Wright and McGuire on the other side. Do you think that this team might be, you know, it's not a different depth chart, you know, we've just exchanged Verse for Garrett, but I was just looking at it earlier today, and I'm starting to think, you know, maybe we should be thinking about trying to get some veteran leadership into that defensive line, particularly at edge, and maybe a little bit more depth. You know, would someone like a Joey Bosa bringing in a veteran there to work with the youngsters, would that make sense at all? Is Bosa that type of leader even?
Bosa's never led anything in his life other than Bosa. No, look, I think Joey Bosa, if Joey Bosa were inclined, and if you listen to his brother, he's more interested in his golf game right now than football. I think he's going to want to play for a contender. Everybody has sort of connected the dots, including his mother, that he will end up, if he's going anywhere, will end up in San Francisco. We'll see if it happens or not. Obviously, he played with Buffalo last year and did some good things, but I don't see a world where he's going to sort of settle for Cleveland, and I'm not sure that Cleveland necessarily wants him, even though I think Cleveland would certainly benefit from having his style of pass rush added to their room. Mm-hmm. They don't really have a speed rush at all, and it's certainly something going into the next offseason I think they will want. They looked at guys for this before this draft, in guys in that vein, did not take anybody, but I think it's something Rutenberg will want, presuming he's here. Hopefully he's here next year, because I like what I've seen from him so far. But in terms of the leadership component, one, I think the Browns told Jared Verse the second he got here, and even potentially even before that, it's be yourself as much as possible and be a leader. Look, say what you want. I never expected leadership out of Myles Garrett, because that's just not what he was. Just wasn't that phenomenal player. You could look at him and go in awe of his ability. But that's part of the problem, is it was like looking at sort of a demigod. You don't necessarily take advice from that guy, and sort of, as opposed to you just sort of look on and in amazement at what they're able to do.
Verse,
clearly that was important to him with the Rams. He's gotten glowing reviews from teammates, from people who cover the team, in terms of how involved he is from that standpoint. In addition to that, Alex Wright seems to think he's that guy. He had talked about it in his press conference, that was part of what he was taking on to himself. He felt like with the contract extension, that was a sort of reflection of his ability to step up and do that. That's who he wants to be. That covers the edge guys. And I think as much as people may not be ready for it, I can't speak to Malik Collins other than he seems to be a very good football player and seems like he's a fine human being. I can't speak to his leadership.
Right.
I think whether it's even just leading by example, I think they're looking at Mason Graham and saying, take over. It's just how he practices. He does everything. He makes the absolute most of practice. He takes advantage of every rep in terms of effort. Like, you watch him in games. If you watch him last year as a rookie and you see him chase down screens, you see him pursue and get out on plays that are going to the outside. He does that in practice too. You see him fly out and chase things down. I think, you know, obviously they thought Mason Graham's talent was phenomenal, but they sung his praises as a practice player. They sung his praises as a human being. Again, he's young. He's only a bit 23 this year, but I think they're basically looking at him and saying, you're going to be a mainstay for this defense, sort of take control. And then even though he's not part of the defensive line, and that room is going to have to sort of manage itself, clearly, this team is begging Carson Schwechinger to run the show. And I think Carson Schwechinger, that was a big reason he was at every OTA and understands that. I think it was enormous. Say what you will about Kevin Stefanski. I thought that the Steelers game, when he gave him all the bullshit we went through last year with game balls. And why didn't the rookie quarterbacks get game balls and this, that, and the other thing? I did think it was super meaningful when the Browns beat the Steelers and Kevin Stefanski gave Carson Schwechinger that game ball when he played through what could barely walk at one point, got him and played his ass off, and they won the game, and he gave him the game ball. And not only did they give him the game ball, I thought the speech and everything else was sort of basically saying it was Kevin Stefanski's way of saying sort of crowning him the guy as to be the leader of the defense. And it just seems like him, and I know Grant Delpit hasn't been there at OTAs, but I've always looked at him as sort of a really good barometer for the team in general. Those guys, Mason Graham, Carson Schwechinger, and Grant Delpit sort of formed the spine of that defense, and I think those guys are certainly a big part of where they want to go to leadership. Could they use more? Perhaps. Could they use more talent? specifically at edge, yeah, I don't know that they have enough. I like what I've seen from Logan Fano. I think that could end up working out for them. But I think he's still probably better suited to be an edge five than he is an edge four at this point. And they don't have an edge four. I don't think Julian Aquara is going to be that guy. And defensive tackle, I'm very intrigued by Kalia Davis. Mike Hall Jr., look, his talent is incredible. He had the scare with the leg, seems to be good with the brace. We'll see. They need him to be a dude this year, because if he's not, you know, and Malik Collins is in the last year of his deal, we're going to be talking about going out and getting more defensive tackle help and making a big priority this year. But yeah, could they could absolutely use more help. And I'm, you know, I'm greedy for always more defensive line.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm just trying to think through this. And, you know, as we've had this discussion over the course of the last 20 minutes or so, you know, you've got that big difference between Myles Garrett and Jared Verse, Myles Garrett and any other human being, you know, plays edge rusher at this point. But you've made up for some of that with, you know, these draft choices that you got, you know, and so the trade, just on the surface, you know, you can have a legitimate debate about whether it's good for the Browns, good for the Rams, or whether both teams profited. But really, these two sort of intangibles that we've been talking about, the leadership in the locker room and the ability to scheme around the predictability of a Jared Verse, you know, further reduce those concerns that I have about losing Myles Garrett.
Well, let's consider the other part of this with the leadership component. This year is going to be either a very big testament to what Andrew Berry has added to this team in the last 18 months, or it's going to I wouldn't say it's a rebuke, but didn't necessarily address the things we were hoping it would address. Obviously, the Quinshon Judkins legal thing just put such a damper on it, because initially we came out of this 2025 draft and part of it wasn't just, man, they got some really good players. It was, they added a whole pile of really charismatic, energetic, good guys. Mm-hmm. And the good things made it turn sideways. Obviously, the legal case completely fell apart. Again, I will stress, we don't really know these guys, but the belief coming out of Ohio State was that Quinshon Judkins was a very good kid. And then obviously we went in that thing, and immediately everybody sort of understandably, and I don't think unfairly, removed the benefit of the doubt. We come into this year, they draft Spencer Fano and Casey Concepcion, who I said before the draft were going to be the two human beings that I thought would be the easiest to root for in terms of what Cleveland Browns fans would love. Spencer Fano's personality just oozes out of you, as does his effort and his how hard he plays and all this other stuff. And then Casey Concepcion, you know, in terms of how he handles himself and talking about, like, you know, had media people at the combine making fun of his speech impediment, and he went out and made the announcement of, you know, the NFL basically went to him and said, you don't have to do this if you don't want to. And he said, no, I want to do this because I want to do this for all the people who can't. And Casey Concepcion is another guy who was very well regarded as a tremendous person, you know, as a human being. Seems like Denzel Boston fits into that same bucket. I can't speak to Emmanuel Warren. I know Catherine Hickman came out and said she was so enthusiastic about him as a human being. So you add all these guys. You add all these guys. And obviously, we're going to sit here and go, well, they don't have a quarterback. But nevertheless, how is this group adding Jared Verse to all those people I just mentioned? And Harold Fannin, who is another just a really charismatic, great guy, seemingly. Again, caveat, I don't really know. He could be theoretically doing God knows what. But if they – you sort of see it, you've seen Todd Monken sort of talk about this, that, like, he really likes – obviously, I think there was some element of reading the room of the Myles Garrett trading and basically saying, I really like the guys we have here. But he's wrong in terms of they practice hard. They practice fast. They do all this stuff. You know, if this group can sort of galvanize and figure it out and fight through, maybe the record's not be great, but they fight and they've got, you can see them getting better. You can sort of come in together as a team that they're still going to have this question mark potentially, unless, you know, Shedeur Sanders comes out and is great, which would solve a lot of problems and be great for us. That they have, we're, you know, the young core that we're talking about is a nucleus, and we're going to be able to say, hey, we've got all these things in place, and all we need is a few more pieces, including the quarterback. That will certainly be a testament to the leadership culture element that they're trying to sell. And if not, we're going to have questions about what is it going to take to get them where they need to go? Or, wow, this group just, it turns out this group was too young for their own good, and they did need more veterans. So we're going to get a very big test of that. Again, seems like they've got a lot of great guys in that department, Carson Schwechter and others, but we're going to learn a lot real fast in terms of how are they going to deal with starting, you know, I still think of spring football as everybody gets to have fun and it's all great life. And, you know, with July and August and the dog days of summer and pads and contact, we'll see if guys are still with the same attitude. At some point, they're going to be hit with adversity. How are they going to respond? How is it going to, how are they going to get through it?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's hard at this point not to think that the team's on an upward trajectory. You know, based on, you know, the last couple of draft classes, the improved leadership in the locker room, those sort of things. But a lot of teams seem like they're on an upward trajectory before the regular season games start playing. And in Cleveland Browns' recent history, that has been when the bad things start happening, is when the regular season starts. But, you know, I have a lot of hope for this group over the course of the next couple of years. Let's we're 45 minutes into the show. And by the way, if you're watching the show on YouTube, please like and subscribe to the broadcast, not only so we can lure people into our OBR world, but because we know that there's 8 million different podcasts, Browns podcasts out there that you can watch or listen to. We really appreciate your support and showing your support by subscribing and liking the broadcast. So, please do. But we're 45 minutes into the show, and we've not talked about quarterback yet. So, you know, thumbs up for us on that. But I think we do need to address it, because over the course of the OTAs, there's a perception, at least, that Shedeur Sanders might be gaining a little bit of ground against Deshaun Watson. There was a lot of hype about Deshaun Watson early on in the process. Now we're hearing a little bit more Todd Monken saying, well, I'm not so sure about, you know, which one of these guys we're going to pick. Where do you think – do you think that this is an important week for Shedeur Sanders in particular, Pete?
Only insofar as it's 3 days in front of the media, theoretically, and it's going to get him – you know, we basically – what have we had, 4 OTAs in public in total? I've lost track at this point. 3 after the draft and 1 before, I think. So yeah, all of a sudden we go from 4 days over the course of basically a month and a half to 3 days in a row, just in terms of the sheer volume of opportunities he's going to get. It's meaningful. I don't think it's super meaningful in terms of, I don't expect a breakthrough this week. Okay. And that's sort of what I'm waiting for. My read on the situation is I think Shedeur Sanders is trying to figure things out. And starting to see what defenses are doing. And at times it seems like he's hesitating because I think looking at him, he thinks he sees something, but he's not sure. He doesn't want to throw a pick. And there are times where he sort of hesitates, misses an opportunity, or then double takes and goes back and tries to make the throw. And then it's late, so it doesn't connect the right way. I don't think more week is going to break through that. What I think could happen, or hope happens, is that between the 3 more practices this week that we're going to see, and whatever else they're going to do, and then the 6 weeks before training camp, that he's going to get more confidence. And then by the time we get to July and August, that he's going to be ready to make a move. What I would say is that whether you want to tab it as Shedeur Sanders is gaining ground, which would be just a testament to he's a young player getting better, I think the more important point, Deshaun Watson has not seized the job. And to me, you know, if you were one of the people saying, well, maybe Kevin Stefanski was the problem, or Deshaun Watson super healthy, it's absolutely going to be better this time. You would have thought, especially against a quarterback who's a young quarterback who's still developing and still trying to figure things out, he would have come out and just dominated, relatively speaking, and made it very clear, I'm the better quarterback. I'm the 10-year veteran. I'm the guy who should win the job, and could have delivered a quick knockout and basically put Todd Monk into a situation, well, he's the starter. That hasn't happened. And to me, that doesn't mean Deshaun Watson couldn't still win the job, but I think every day that this goes longer without a decision, the more likely bet to me is that Shedeur Sanders is going to find a way to either make up the ground or get that epiphany and make the big jump and either draw even or just pass him and put himself in position to take the job. I don't see I'm not going to say it can't happen. Maybe it's going to suddenly click for Deshaun Watson. You're going to see it better. He's going to operate it better. He's not going to get healthier. He's not going to get more athletic. We've got history to judge that the longer this process goes on, the closer that when we actually get to real football, he gets worse, not better. So right. I think all of that plays to Shedeur Sanders' advantage. Now, as I wrote, the lane is there. The door is open. Shedeur Sanders has to do things necessary to go through it. Can he do it? We shall see. But I just think it's really set up for him. And I think Todd Monken, can be, guilty of gassing up his guys in the face of what was not very good for people. As Todd Monken likes to remind the media, you have eyes. Well, yeah, I watched Wednesday and they got their asses kicked. But I do give him credit in that he's not allowing himself to be fooled by a flash in the pan. He has history as a guy to say Deshaun Watson has not been able to prove he's been able to do this in full contact, and that previous years, whether it was the team or media going, oh, he looks great, it's going to be different, this is the guy, I think he's smart to realize, I'm going to be patient and see how this thing plays out. And at the same time, he benefits, because if Shedeur Sanders can get better, certainly if he's the guy who can give him the job, that makes his life infinitely easier. There's no upside to get the job to Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson has no future. Shedeur Sanders might. Shedeur Sanders, right. If he wins the job, there are going to be people who are immediately willing to sort of watch this team and be excited about it, that are never going to get back on board with Deshaun Watson. And if Shedeur Sanders is somehow able to, through the course of the season, prove that he can be that guy, everybody in Northeast Ohio, and including a whole bunch of people in Colorado and various other places, are going to be super excited about the Browns.
Right.
That's not going to happen with Deshaun Watson, even if he plays well or better than he has. And I just don't see the evidence that he's going to.
No, I think you're tapping into to my philosophy on Watson and Sanders, which is that if it's close, it's no contest. If it's close, you have to go with Shedeur because of Watson's salary situation, his contract situation, his history of looking okay during preseason and not playing well in the regular season. I would say Watson has to crush Shedeur Sanders during training camp in order to win the starting job, at least if I was making the decision, which thankfully to everyone I'm not. But it seems to me like, tie goes to the runner, tie goes to the second-year player here.
Yeah, I mean, could we come out of this 3 days later and say Deshaun Watson absolutely destroyed Shedeur Sanders? And obviously we've seen some people in the media saying he needs to announce a starter before they get to training camp or by the end of the mini camp. Todd Monken has basically made it very clear he has no interest in doing anything of the sort. His timeline is before the Jaguars, by the time they get to the Jaguars, that he needs to have a depth chart in place and be ready to go. But ultimately, I understand the benefit of being able to say, hey, he's the starter, and being able to really go full speed ahead one way or the other. But if Todd Monken were to name Deshaun Watson the starter, and then we get to August, and then he just sucks, like it's a really poor look for him to then have to go, well, I know what I said before, but actually it's going to be Shedeur because, unflatteringly, Deshaun Watson stuck out the joint. We got the joint practice or whatever. I think that's far likelier to be where this thing gets decided is when we get to joint practices. I understand people want to see this thing go through faster, and they think they're at a disadvantage because the Cincinnati Bengals are not questioning who their quarterback's going to be. The Baltimore Ravens are not wondering who the quarterback's going to be. So they have a slight advantage. But particularly if you're hoping Deshaun Watson loses the job, the longer this thing goes, the better those chances are.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap up the quarterback conversation and turn to a truly OBR-like subject, which is right guard. I have to talk right guard before we get through this program. During the course of the week, Munkin sort of gave the impression that Spencer Fanau has now moved in with the number ones at left tackle. Big surprise. You've got Titus at right tackle. Zion Johnson at left guard, unless Betonio magically returns. And Elgin Dinkins at either center or right guard, but he's more familiar playing center, right? So they appear to have four different guys who might be a potential right guard for them. Tevin Jenkins, Austin Barber, Jack Conley, mysterious Jack Conley, and even more mysterious Chad Center. But you saw a lot of Jack Conley playing right guard last week, didn't you?
I did. Now, was that just – are the Browns just rotating a whole bunch of guys and we just happen to show up on the days where Jack Conley's getting a whole lot of looks? A second-year guy who has been on a bunch of practice squads? Maybe. That's possible, but the fact is they're at least looking at Jack Conley, which is interesting to me. Now, I think the Browns' dream scenario is that somehow Parker Brailsford is good enough to start. If Parker Brailsford is good enough to start, Elgin Dinkins goes to right guard, and you feel very good about your starting five. Elgin Dinkins is a very good guard, and as many people will point out, better guard than center. So that's the dream. Now, if Parker Brailsford's not there yet, Parker Brailsford can't do it, then we get Elgin Dinkins at center, and then we've got the question of who's going to play right guard. And obviously some of this can't be figured out until they get pads on. As far as Jack Conley goes, evidently he's either doing enough to impress coaches that, by the way, were different coaches than the guys who brought him in, because Jack Conley was signed to the practice squad in November of, I think, last year. So he was retained as a reserves futures contract. Munkin and George Warhop come into this thing, and he's there, and they're putting him on the field, and he's apparently done enough to impress them. They're at least giving a look. Now, could we get to camp and pads on, and Mason Graham just ragdolls him and ends this thing? Perhaps, but it's at least one more guy. Now, the flip side of that is you could also look at, if Jack Conley's repping, how bad must the other guys be that they are looking at Jack Conley, who's a second year guy, undrafted rookie, he's 24 years old. BC guy, so I always love the BC lineman that just comes with the reputation. And by the way, he plays to it. He's a road grading physical guy. So that may tell you that, wow, the right guard is bad enough that Jack Conley's getting looked. So on the one hand, it could be a great story if Jack Conley can prove this. And ultimately they got four starters, and then an undrafted free agent who's 24 years old found his way into the lineup and was good enough to be a player. Great. Like, that would solve a lot of problems for this team. But at the very least, I'd like to find out more. I'm curious to see where this thing goes with Conley and the right guard position in general, because they've thrown a lot of bodies at that spot so far. And evidently, we're going to see. And I don't know if we'll get a real answer this week. But at the very least, this week should give us a look as to just how many guys are repping there.
Yeah. I would not be able to tell who's doing a good job and doing a bad job at right guard, but I'm glad that you're going to be there keeping track of that. But one of the things that just has a good vibe to me, they spent a relatively high draft pick to get Austin Barber. Now, obviously, he's played tackle, but Munkin says he thinks he can go inside. I really sort of like the notion of him playing at right guard in between two veterans, you know? And you've got, youth on left tackle, youth at right guard. I don't know how good he is. I haven't heard a lot of things. But if he can play inside, is he a legitimate candidate to fill that role?
I mean, I wouldn't rule it out. I would say this. both my reaction and somebody I talked to within the organization's reaction when they got Austin Barber in person was he's thicker than we thought he would be, which is good. He because on tape, he's obviously a large man, but he's so tall that he looks sort of narrow, and you worry about trying to put that guy at guard. So I always looked at it and went, man, this guy's definitely a tackle. I still think he's a tackle, but the fact that he is thicker than both myself and somebody who works for the team thought, it lives gives you a world where you could believe that maybe he could. Now,
right.
The thing with Austin Barber is the same thing with Parker Brailsford, is they're rookies that weren't picked in the first round, and even not all first round guys are right out of the gate, but it's really hard for second round picks on down. And again, we'll see what happens when pads come on, how these guys hold up. There are questions to be answered on that. Like, would it shock me if Jared Verse absolutely destroys Austin Barber based on what I saw him do against Reuben Bain? No, but I really like what I've seen from Austin Barber. I can't really say much based on OTAs. It's other than he's athletic, because nobody's really hitting him. I'll be curious to see if they play around with that. I mean, obviously, Todd Monken has said basically we like him at tackle, but he's got to be able to do guard. But how much work is he going to get this week? What is that going to look like? And then when they get pads on, how is he going to hold up when he gets in pads? That could be an interesting wrinkle to this whole thing. I don't know that I just put him in the starting lineup. But again, this comes down to is Jack Conley in there because he's really impressive, or because the rest of the group is not great?
Yeah. Yeah, good question. Something we'll continue to follow. I'm looking forward to your Rumor Central thread tomorrow and over the course of the next couple of days with what you're seeing from the sidelines out there. Last, before we go, we have to say goodbye to Brendan Sorsby as a topic on this show, at least for a month, maybe two.
20 minutes. Okay, look, the NCAA has already appealed. There are multiple wrinkles that could end this thing immediately. To your point, a judge who may or may not be from Lubbock ruled or granted an injunction, which theoretically makes Brendan Sorsby eligible. And the explanation on why he did that was pathetic, but whatever. At least for this moment, he's eligible. The NCAA has already noted their intent to appeal. The Big 12 reportedly teams are basically getting together, basically threatening that they're not going to play Texas Tech. So that's another wrinkle to this whole thing. And so there's a whole lot of elements where this could still derail and put him back in the supplemental draft. But this is part of the problem. But here's what I'll say. Selfishly, from an entirely unattached, just football, college football enjoyer, would I rather see Brendan Sorsby play football for Texas Tech, because Texas Tech will be very good and would be one of the many, many, many teams in the college football who would be very good? Sure. Do I say that while also appreciating the absolute reprehensible nature in which he would be doing it? Yes, it's ridiculous that he could be playing college football in a situation where he bet on his own team's games. Like, Ohio State fans, how many – good Lord, the amount of Arch Schleister references I've seen lately on our forums. Obviously, Pete Rose, who Texas Tech has on the schedule, has Cincinnati. And allegedly, there may or may not be fans printing out heads of Pete Rose for that game. The black side. And I think the part that bothers me the most is, like, why gambling in sports was such a big deal, and it goes back to the Black Sox, which is that they were worried the mob was involved in sports and basically being able to impact the results of games. Like, if whether it's Sorsby or somebody else is compromised, then somebody has leverage on him and can make him do things. And we've seen that. Like, people seem to conveniently forget NBA players have been thrown out of the sport for trying to fix bets. Obviously, the Cleveland Guardians, Emmanuel Clase is never going to pitch again because of trying to manipulate the game. So That is certainly a big picture element. I continue to believe whether Sorsby is able to play this year or not, the NFL is eventually going to put the hammer down. I just refuse to believe they do not want to deal with a situation where this guy goes unpunished. I don't believe it. I think if he does end up in the supplemental draft, he's getting at least a year, could be longer, could be just forever. Because granted, the NFL is married to gambling, but they do not want to deal with guy betting on himself gets to play in the league scot-free when they have a clear guideline in which they've suspended guys for betting on things that are not even football, just sports in general, because they used an app that's tracked within a team facility. That doesn't even get the ridiculous hypocrisy relative to college football. Rick Neuheisel was fired from the University of Washington for participating in a pool for a March Madness tournament with like coworkers in the office. We've seen players from other teams who bet on something that was completely unrelated and never got to play again. So I don't think this is remotely settled. I think the pressure on the Big 12 is going to be enormous, but yeah, we should see. At least as we sit here right now, he's eligible. The backlash has been vociferous. People are pissed. We'll see.
Yeah, but I think the more important thing is that I am installing a Brendan Sorsby moratorium on Gang of Three for at least a month. For at least a month. We are not going to mention this because he is not going to be Cleveland Brown. And if they got him in the supplemental draft, he probably wouldn't be playing for a while anyway. It's a dead subject. Dead to me. Well, thank you, Pete. I appreciate it. Been another hour of the Gang of Three / X'd Out 2 for tonight. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Really appreciate you coming by. Really appreciate the likes and subscribes and the comments in the chat room. I'm sorry that we couldn't get to some questions that scrolled through here today, but we'll be able to deal with those in the weeks and months ahead as the news cycle sort of slows down a little bit. Thanks again, Pete. Thanks again for joining us, everybody who watched. And go Browns. We'll see you next week.